Morning.
Good evening.
Greetings.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Good day.
Good day. And John, what time of the day is it where you are?
2 o'clock in the morning. 2 a.m.
Oh, my God.
Now, 2 o'clock in the morning. Wow. You get, like, MOOC bonus points for that.
That's Thanks. Right. Yeah. Oh, wow. And Jeff, what time is it where you are?
It is 11 p.m.
Oh, wow. That's still pretty late.
And what time is it where you are?
7 a.m. Central California.
So really, none of it's just not a convenient time for any of us, and we all showed up. We all get extra points.
Yeah, how is it that you chose this time, Jeff? Is it because everything else is busy?
This is the global sweet spot. It's
a
time for the people on the west coast of the Americas. It's
the global sweet
a little bit
spot.
Late
I'm
for
tweet
those
that.
Of us
I like
in,
that.
A little late for those of us in Northeast Asia, really late for those of us in Kiwi land. But except for Hawaiians, almost everyone can tune in.
Oh.
Would be able to see this at all, but I'm signing into Google Plus on the Android phone here.
Oh, very cool. Are you going to try to join this Hangout?
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Oh, man, this could be history.
There it is.
Yeah, and I saw that, what was there? Something about Google Plus and iPhones I saw yesterday, but I didn't follow up on that yet.
Yeah, I saw lots of people sharing that. I guess they released the Google Plus thing for iPhone.
Yeah.
If there's your profile.
That is me. A lot of hanging out.
Yeah.
What happened?
I get yeah, it's really small print. We are sorry, but it doesn't work on this.
Yep, that's the same message I got.
You know, amazingly that we could even see, John, what you held up there when you held it up close to the camera, we could actually see it said that. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So how's your week been?
That's my EduMOOC circle. I mean, you can see everybody who's in it.
How many people do you have in your EduMOOC circle?
Oh, about half a dozen. And what? Yeah, their pictures are just kind of coming in. You see that? They're just populating as we go.
Yeah, I didn't create an EduMOOC circle because I figured I don't create many. Well, I guess I would create temporary circles, but I figured most people in my EduMOOC circle would also be in my EdTech circle, and so. I just have a big – that's my biggest circle is my EdTech. What's your biggest circle? You can pass if you want. That's too private.
You know, gosh. It's EduMOOC. I've got 6 people in that group. Everybody's 5, 4, 2. Yeah.
When this all started, I only did 2 circles. One was friends and the other was EduMOOC. So everybody – well – and then all the EduMOOC people, let's see how many EduMOOC is.
All right, so now let's see if we can go the other way. Where am I? Here's the Hangout. Oh, wow. All right, so now I'm going to use my camera to take a picture of the screen.
60 EduMOOC.
And send that directly to... Google Plus. It's an instant upload. Did it do it? No, Rob, it's your picture, but you can see the chat line.
Who are you sending that out to?
I think it goes directly up onto my my Plus page. I don't know where.
Yeah.
I get to put something with it. All right. So this was EduMOOC. First time I've tried this.
And John, and I forget, what is your day job?
I develop Android applications.
Oh, that's right. That's the other irony in this.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and invite Chaos and make this hangout public.
Yeah, do. Have you tried to break it? I mean, have you got more than 10 people in a hangout yet?
No. I've had 10, okay, but I have not had more than 10.
Yeah.
And so. I that's not very doable. There's a lot of talk about daisy chaining.
That's all of the weekend hike that I took, so... Yeah.
Oh, nice. And where was that?
That was in Shakespeare Regional Park, just north of Auckland here. It's a really gorgeous area. Everywhere around Auckland is gorgeous. I used to live in San Diego, and we would go out to this place called La Jolla.
La Jolla.
San Diego?
Yeah.
Everywhere around Auckland is like La Jolla, except for there's nobody there. It's just... boggles the mind that there can be so much beautiful coastline and there just aren't enough people to fill up all of the, you know, wonderful, you know,
spaces,
tree-lined beaches. And they've got these trees out here called Pahutakaua trees that are, they hang out over the beach and are dark green with red flowers. They're like the Kiwi Christmas tree. So,
how did you wind up in New Zealand?
I just picked it. I majored in geography. And I said, what has all of the characteristics that I would really like to have in a place? You know, it's English speaking. It's, you know, fairly affluent. It's really kind of clean and, you know, lots of nature. I'm going to be doing some skiing here in a couple of weeks. You know, they've got some really alpine kind of ski resorts down on the South Island, and here in the North Island they have a volcano, and you want to have a really unusual ski experience, go skiing on a volcano sometime, because the rock where it sticks through the snow is this absolutely jet black, and then the snow is of course very, you know, the contrasts are just stunning. Why not, you know, once you're on the internet you can be any place.
Wow. I'm convinced.
And how long have you been there, John?
A couple of years. I got on a plane in July 4th, 2009, Independence Day.
You make it sound like it was just all of a sudden one day you got on a plane and moved to Australia.
I did, seriously, I did. I just thought, oh, hey, no, it was a discount ticket. You know, I said, oh, okay, I can get down here for $700. All right, I'll do it.
Have you been back to the States?
Yes, I did a really unusual thing. Last winter, the Southern Hemisphere winter, I went to a place called Singularity University. Have you ever heard of this?
No, it's in Mountain View, cosmic or something.
It's hosted at NASA Ames, right next to the Googleplex. And this futurist, a guy named Ray Kurzweil,
Peter
Diamandis, who started the XPRIZE stuff, got together and they said they had picked the top 80 graduate students out of a pool of 1,600 applicants to run this 10-week summer program that would study exponential technologies. And so I sat around with these really kind of amazing minds gathered from all over the globe, and try to figure out how to deal with the fact that the computing technology is, you know, developing at an exponential rate, according to all of Kurzweil's research. You know, he keeps mentioning how when he first started working with computers, you know, it would take an entire office building to hold what is, you know, now inside one of these devices. You know, a million-fold increase in computing power and reduction in space, and that this trend is just going to continue, and that by his prediction, by about 2045, I forgot now, that the computing will reach a level of human intelligence. So that's what the singularity of Singularity University refers to. This point where we have such smart machines that they become smarter than we are, and we don't know what happens after that. But we should start thinking about it now, just so we'll be ready, and taking advantage of all this technology to do interesting and important things, like, you know, solving world hunger and, we had all of these target projects for our program, and they were, you know, things like water, hunger, poverty. We wanted to have one on education, but the faculty hadn't sort of prepared for that, so they're doing education this time around.
When is that happening?
It's on right now. It's a 10-week program during the summer there in the States.
Cool. Rob, I just want to let you know I muted you because we're getting typing noises. Please unmute whenever you want.
I'm going to try and send through a link. What's the best place to post a...
I just tweeted a link to the... I'll put it in the chat here.
In the Google Plus chat? Are you capturing that chat? The one that's... If you click invite chat right on the bottom bar?
It's not automatically archived, but you can save it before you close the Hangout.
Okay, great.
Which I often forget to do.
Well, that's where I've just put the link to SingularityU.
Ah, okay. I will, please, before we hang up, remind me to, hey, save the chat.
Okay.
Rob, are you unmuted?
Now I am.
Okay.
No, I knew you. I thought, uh-oh, I'm breathing too much or something. No, just from our experiences the last two times, I know you're...
You know my reputation.
Sensitivity of your ears, yeah.
So what were you typing?
Well, I was typing. He'd reshared my post, I can see here, at 2:14 a.m.
Yeah.
You've got a big echo chamber going on here.
Aren't you, and, oh, shoot, Jeff, aren't you in Korea? Is that where you are?
I am.
Yeah, okay. Couldn't remember that. That's where I thought.
So yeah. Have you guys done anything with a MOOC in this past week? Or just played with Google Plus?
I made a big Wiki the Speech thing about, you asked me to go through that theory poplet.
Mm-hmm.
So I did.
Ooh.
In Wiki the Speech. So now there's a 33-slide presentation that talks all about learning theories using some of these tools.
So how's the whole Wiki to Speech thing going? This launched 2 weeks ago, didn't it? 3 weeks ago?
Launched?
Or
when I
asked you on the first session, like, yes, how long has it been around, you said, oh, just kind of started.
Well... The most recent implementation of it, where I started 2 years ago working on it from the perspective of you could do anything. You could talk, you could gesture, and now I've boiled that down to the kind of the only things the world is really ready for is text to speech, because the voice recognition isn't sufficiently accurate that people get put off, and the gesture is even worse. It's interesting to look at some of this stuff. I mean, you heard about the Microsoft Kinect game?
No.
No?
No.
You really should check it out. It's an amazing idea. Unlike the Wii device, you know, which had a sort of an accelerometer in it, and so you could, you know, play golf just by swinging your arm, with Kinect, there's just a camera watching you, and so you just literally swing your arms, and it can detect the movement of your body physically and animate a character in the game to play golf. So you could potentially see applications for that, you know, you enter into a completely virtual world and do, you know, these sort of simulated experiments with things, where you're just sort of standing in front of a television set with this Kinect device watching you, you know, moving your arms around, and, you know, things are happening in the virtual world. So if we don't ultimately talk very much about this in EduMOOC, you know, that part that says online learning today and tomorrow. This is where the whole Singularity University and the perspective on, you know, computers are just going to get more and more powerful, you know, really is going to surprise people. It's going to be like the Human Genome Project, which, you know,
how used far to be, away are we from having a holodeck?
Exactly. This what we're talking about is holodeck-like behavior in our interactions with the computer. Did you see the Pranav Mistry TED Talk about this thing called Sixth Sense?
No.
Is an MIT researcher who basically had rigged up a device that would hang on your around your neck, like you might normally carry a snapshot camera or something like that. But this not only had a video camera in it, but it also had a little projector, so that as you walked around, the camera could detect you're making, you know, I'm taking a picture, symbols, and decide, oh, okay, I'll capture that image. And then after you got a bunch of those images, you could just walk up to a wall and say, show me, with your hands. This is a, you know, a gesture that the device would recognize. All the pictures would then be displayed, projected against the wall by the little projector that's part of this device. And then you could, you know, use essentially touch screen types of, you know, zoom in and, you know, shuffle them around and do all the things you would want to do to manipulate actual physical objects in a completely, you know, virtual or augmented reality kind of way.
So, John, do you have any idea what your day job is going to be in 10 years?
It's undoubtedly going to involve some of this, developing some of this crazy stuff, because, the phone, as we look at it today, has already got two cameras on it, and GPS, and accelerometer. I mean, I'd go to a monthly meeting of guys who are interested in Android stuff. And one of them, you know that thing, that little game that used to play that was sort of two little tilting boards with a bunch of holes in it, and the object was to turn some knobs to keep the ball from falling through the holes. It was called, you know, Tilt-A-Maze or something like that. So what he did, he took his mobile phone, and he connected it up so that the accelerometer in the phone would drive some little servo motors to make this puzzle tilt. And so now he's got an electronic version of this thing that he posted all the instructions up on a site called Instructables. Have you ever heard of this?
Yes.
It's where you can learn how to make all kinds of things. And won the top toy competition. But this is where things are going. I mean, that hobbyists basically are going to be able to take this device and connect it up to other, like, electronic gadgetry and make all kinds of wild and fun things. Like, just this last weekend at this unconference I went to, they had all of the radio-controlled flying and driving and sailing things. Have you played around with one of these little two-bladed helicopters that just kind of hovers and lands on your hand and flies upside down, and you know, you can do all kinds of crazy things with it?
I think I've seen those amazing at conferences, right?
Yeah, no, it's all this radio controlled stuff that I mean, I haven't gotten into it myself, but it just amazes me, as you know, what people are figuring out how to do it. There's a guy here in Auckland who his goal is to have a boat that will self-propel and navigate itself around New Zealand. So, you know, he figures he can't build a Predator drone that will go flying off somewhere because it'll crash and he'll lose all his gear. But a boat, at least, you know, even if it completely runs out of power, at least it's going to still be floating out there in the ocean someplace and he can go rescue it. But meanwhile, he's sorting out how to program this thing up so that it'll know where it is, it'll know how to go where it needs to go, and, you know, one day he's just going to launch it and it'll go and, you know, collect research data or whatever. And people are really getting empowered by this technology to do it yourself in really astonishing ways. the really surprising one to me that I learned about at this Singularity University is all the genetic stuff. Do you know you can do your own sort of homebrew genetic testing?
Oh, that sounds dangerous.
It is wild. I mean, you put the stuff through this little kit that you can get, you know, a DIY genome stuff, and we're going to see some really unusual discoveries made by people that are out there just tinkering around using all of this new technology to visualize and interpret data about things that, you know, we just never had it the ability to access before. It was just, you know, cost too much, or, you know, was too difficult, and kind of now you can do it in your kitchen sink.
So is that all happening there in Australia?
That was mostly happening in Southern California. Mountain View and San Jose, but, you know, frankly, we've got smart people all over the globe playing around with this stuff.
How much are you doing global collaboration? How much do you work with people in your time zone or on your island, and how much are you working globally during the day?
Objective I have is to be working around the clock. Yeah, basically to have somebody on the projects that I'm interested in all the time. And I haven't gotten there yet, but I've certainly had significant communications with people in, you know, Africa and South America, and early on a collaborator in Norway, and
are the institutions supporting this, or are they a little hesitant to lose their edge or their competitive edge?
You know, the thing I'm finding, working in the academic institution that I do, scholarship is historically or traditionally a solo endeavor. I mean, unless you have your established, you know, sort of team of researchers to do a project, you know, then you're all going to get your names on the paper. A PhD student is supposed to go off and do their own, you know, literature review, and ultimately be the one who writes the dissertation. And so I haven't had much in the way of support from colleagues, if I get some grant money, I think I can persuade them to join me.
Grant money has a way of changing policy, huh?
Yes.
And where would you get that kind of grant money from?
It doesn't need to be a lot.
Where do you even look, I guess, is my question.
Oh, okay. Well, I started in the institution where I study. Have actually a commercialization group called the AUT Enterprises Limited, who are always kind of scanning through the research going on at the university to see, you know, where some of it might actually be, you know, turned into some money-making opportunity. And they don't have a lot of money to put behind these ideas, but they have, you know, the seed money. From there, you go into the venture community. There's a whole bunch of startup groups around here, and coming from the world of finance, I'm very interested in entrepreneurship, and have been to a thing called Startup Weekend, which literally is you get, you know, 50, 60 people come to an office, and they are given the task from Friday night until Sunday night, working nonstop, to come up with business plans and, if possible, actual products that would launch a small business by the end of the weekend.
Wow.
You come from the world of finance?
Yeah, I'm an MBA and was working on the trading desk at Morgan Stanley in New York before I came to Auckland.
What an interesting path.
Yeah. I work for a hedge fund. I'm a little bit like that Salman Khan guy. You know, he had all this kind of finance stuff under his belt before he decided to get into online education.
So is this just your retirement? Just getting a PhD in your...
Yeah, my mother got a PhD at age 50 and then went on to have this really great teaching career as a political scientist. She ran an internship program where she took students to Canada to study the Canadian political system in Ottawa and to Washington, D.C. So I'd sort of like to honor my mother's... She passed away a couple of years ago, and do something for the world of education.
Wow.
Interesting. How's your transition going, Rob?
Oh, it's going great. Yeah. You know,
last
and John,
week we saw you at the conference, right? So
yeah, that's right. Well, so let me just share. So the four themes of that conference. So Sloan C, you know, runs all the online learning research pretty much for higher ed. And so this was their conference. The interesting part of this conference, held in San Jose, California, is there were literally people from all over the world. So first of all, that kind of blew me away. I mean, maybe because it was only like 500 people versus ISTE that was, you know, tons of people. And there may have been people from all over the world at ISTE. I just didn't sit with them. But at this conference, I sat with people from Egypt. This was pretty cool. This guy presented, a professor from Norway, used Twitter as the main communication device for his college course. He said, I'm not using Blackboard, I'm not using email, only Twitter after I send this email out. And so through hashtags and setting up different interactions that way, he said he got tired of getting the same question from a bunch of students in his email. And so he thought this might be the solution. So he found that it really worked well for them. And it met the, you know, the immediacy needs of, you know, that generation. So anyway, to that conference, and I'm working with university professors now who are moving their courses online. So I'm kind of like an online learning coach. So that's been fun. Of course, these people are people that I know because when I got my doctorate, you know, I took all their classes. So, and I'm liking working from home. This is nice. And Jeff, I forget, what is your life like?
I have a day job. I teach at Pusan University of Foreign Studies. I teach in the teacher training program.
Oh, wow.
So these are elementary and secondary English teachers here in Korea. So I do that as my day job, and when I'm not doing that, I'm either hanging out on the veranda with my wife or working on my various geek endeavors.
So do you make all those teachers that you train use the technology?
To the best of my ability.
So it's a challenge there like any place.
Sure, but Korea is not a bad place to tackle that challenge. You know, we've got bandwidth to burn, and everyone's connected, and everyone has a good cell phone, and they're, you know, I'm teaching a lot of 30-somethings, 40-somethings.
Oh.
But they're, you know, they're willing to give it a shot. Korea's great at rapid change. And if you can kind of provide utility, they're willing to make that change.
Nice. In fact, that was one of the big themes of this conference. I guess this has been the summer for me. At the beginning of the summer, I didn't know where, you know, mobile learning really fit in online learning. But boy, that was a common theme at this conference. You know, and the three screens, you know. Oh, and John, that must be tough for you, is, you know, you want something created for a computer, for an iPad or tablet, and for an iPhone. I'm thinking of the poor publishing industry, you know, just wrestling with going from print to digital. Now they got to deal with different sizes of screens.
Yeah,
as I learned, there's all that different, you know, different technologies for different screens.
It does change things pretty dramatically. And so, yeah, the EPUB formats are trying to find some way to just reflow everything. But the one that has really interested me is this thing called OnSwipe. It's called Insanely Easy Tablet Publishing. Lets you provide beautiful app-like experience for your website on a tablet. They haven't really launched. It's a sort of a invite-only, get yours kind of thing at the moment. The demo video is just really stunning. It gives you this very fluid, you know, sort of like glossy magazine feel to your tablet experience.
So have you heard of Inkling?
Yes.
How does it compare to that?
Let's see here. Refresh my memory.
Because what's interesting about Inkling is it's the investors are Pearson, McGraw-Hill, the big publishing people.
Yep. That has a more academic feel to it. Yeah, this OnSwipe is really meant to be, you know, your People magazine and everything,
oh,
you know, like that. So,
got it.
Yep. But, I would expect they're pretty similar. And again, my real question about some of this stuff is, okay, we're looking potentially at the same kind of, you know, publishing model that created, you know, Encarta, right?
Yeah,
And that's completely gone. So, mm-hmm. You know, why aren't we, you know, focusing now on what we know was successful in the world of, you know, reference materials on producing some kind of a collaborative authoring framework?
Yeah, why is that, Stephen?
Welcome.
Hope you don't mind if I broadcast this on Ed Radio.
Not at all.
Ship of zero.
You're coming in a little bit low, Stephen.
Okay. I don't know how to... Is this any better?
Yes.
Okay. So it's just a matter of me speaking louder. I really got to solve my microphone issue. I have this, but it's way too faint.
You know, I've heard that about the snowball for years.
Yeah. It's not loud enough. I can't use it. I can use it if I talk right like this, but my headphone microphone won't work. I don't know why it's not working. So I'm actually using the microphone that is on my webcam. It's a nice little condenser mic. I'd show it to you, but it's attached to my webcam.
Yeah. It's everybody's challenge.
I went to a picture shop yesterday. There's no mics. There's no microphones for sale.
I'm loving all the stuff behind you. You know, I'm seeing like your EXO over here and your Perl book over there and Ubuntu, and yeah, this is a man I want to get to know.
Yeah.
So wonderful.
Anyhow, I'm amazed, John, you can even read that.
Actually, I can't read it.
Do you have a high def webcam, Stephen?
I think so.
Yeah, you got some nice webcam there.
I also maximized my Google Plus view here to fill up an entire, you know, full. Well,
that'll do it.
So is that your real house, John, or is that just like a backdrop you use for your?
That is just a backdrop. Yeah, no, I don't actually live here. Seriously, I don't.
So, Stephen, you did an excellent job figuring out what Google needs to do with circles. What do they need to do?
What do they need to do? Okay. The big problem with circles is that there's only one output string, right? So if you're following me, you're following everything. And what I wanted in circles was a way to show just facets of myself. I have different channels for different things that I do. I have my Flickr channel. I have my Twitter channel, which I just use for little inconsequential tweets. I have different blogs. I have a blog called Let's Make Some Art Now, Damn It, which is for art projects. I have another one which is Half an Hour, which is political. I have my Google Share RSS feed, which almost nobody knows about, which is totally political stuff, you know, global warming and all of that. And all it is me sharing. The thing is, the main point is, I have all of these different channels. And if somebody's following me on Google, they can only follow the one channel. And so I want to be able to allow people to add me to their circles, but just add a facet of me to to my circles. So that's one of the things. The other thing is when I distribute content to the circle, it's distributed private to the people in that circle. So it's sort of like the flip side of the facets thing, right? I want to be able to distribute content to circles, but do so in a public way. So it's kind of like public circles, or as I like to call them, facets. And I think if Google added those, that would really help the system. And just as an aside, this is really the first thing I think Google should do in the longer term, because if they open it up, and it almost sounds like they might open it up, then we could have this really fabulous system where Google Plus acts like this great information processing system. So I could bring my content in, because there would be APIs that allow me to do this, from my blogs, from Twitter, I could email in from Flickr, whatever, right? Then expose it to different facets, people subscribe to whatever facets they want, and then in the ideal world, we could actually harvest the output of this into other applications. You can already harvest a Google Plus feed. There's a G Plus feed or something like that right now that lets you harvest your RSS feed from your Google Plus stream. If we had this, then we could have this sort of matrix in the middle of all of the stuff that we do externally that could allow us to bring stuff in, mix it, match it, combine it, do whatever we want with it, and then send it off to the greater world. That would be awesome.
Have you written your Dear Google yet? Your Dear Google letter yet?
I wrote a blog post. That's how I write to Google. So I write a blog post, and then they decide if they want to listen to me. They probably don't, but they decide.
John, what are you typing away about?
I'm actually making a wiki to speech presentation that so far has 6 slides in it, including the let's make some art, damn it, and Steven's comments about Google Plus and facets.
That's fast.
That's the whole point. Yeah,
have you seen John's wiki to speech stuff, yeah. Steven?
No, I haven't. What's the URL?
This is a good item for the OL Daily.
It sounds like it might be. What is it, wikitospeech.com?
Org.
And was that with a 2 or a spell?
T-O. It's actually, yeah. wikitospeech.org.
That's good for the 0 listeners on Ed Radio to get that. I entered a text chat to Ed Radio this morning. I'm so proud of myself.
Oh, yay. I'm going to go check that out.
And I did it in an open and friendly way.
What did you choose?
I found an IRC client I plugged in here, and it goes to Freenode. So you don't even have to use this. You can use your own IRC client to chat if you want.
Does it automatically archive?
No, I don't know how to do that.
Ah, okay. So you need to log in.
Yeah.
And
is there a way to automatically archive IRC? If so, that's news to me. It'd be good news to me, but it's still news to me. Still waiting for you.
I'm not aware of one.
Okay. Yeah, that would be nice. Thinking about that.
But you'd think it'd be doable. I mean, IRC world is so full of coding geeks. Someone can figure that out.
Oh, yeah, there's going to be.
So far, it's you and me in there. Steven, we can text chat together.
We can text chat just as though we were on Google Plus.
which is my big wish list item for Google Plus. I feel like the messaging component is pretty weak. Like, when I want to just send a message to someone, I can create a post and share with just them. I can find my little Google chat thing and chat with them. But that needs to be integrated more smoothly.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, there's no www on the beginning of WikiSpeech, is there?
What? No. So what do you click on Steven's Ed Radio page? Oh, do you click on chat?
Jeff? The little IRC window there, you have to choose an ID and click connect.
Yoboseyo?
This is the Korean for when you answer a phone, you say Yoboseyo.
Yoboseyo?
Yoboseyo. And then then you get this endless loop of Yoboseyos going.
Yoboseyo. Okay.
All right, so I've just posted into my Dropbox the first slides from the summary of the current presentation. So there eventually will be 7 slides there with voiceovers that are generated using the text-to-speech engine on this Mac.
Very good.
So what's the plan for this, John? Like, is this a commercial thing? Is this an academic thing? Is this the next component of Wikipedia?
All of those are open possibilities at this juncture. I in some ways, sort of feel like I could be, Larry Page figuring out how, page count works. And, at some point, this is going to turn into, some hugely impactful global scale, educational resource, it's got some kinks that need to be worked out of it, and the Kurzweilian view of things is that it's inevitable that somebody's going to figure out how to make all of this stuff happen, and so if I can kind of nudge people in the right direction and maybe contribute a few of the ideas that really make the thing click. Really, all I'm doing from my perspective is looking out at what's actually already working and just trying to bring those pieces together. And the fact of have you heard perhaps the new Apple Lion operating system is going to come replete with a whole variety of new voices. So currently we've just had Alex to play with, and he's pretty good. He managed to make it into a TED Talk where that famous Roger Ebert, the movie reviewer, had a jaw cancer and ultimately was no longer able to speak himself. And so he did a TED Talk where he used his laptop, and the laptop actually told jokes. It was really quite effective. And so the power to kind of use those robot voices when they sound ultimately so human, really. And the vendors are actually working now on the prosody of the words. So it won't just be the same, sort of monotonic, but you could have things that are spoken a little softer, and you can have things that are spoken loudly and more quickly. And those are the kinds of markups that you can add to the way the robot is delivering the message.
Michael Marzio, bonjour.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Good to see you. This Great is my first you. Hangout. Excuse me for interrupting.
Not at all. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. I'll let you go on. This is my, like I said, my first hangout. So this is American Visitor Week, and everyone is downstairs at the moment. But I didn't want to miss my first hangout.
All right, where are you calling from?
From south of France.
Ah, right.
And Rob, I'm sorry to nag you about your audio, but I find it hard to believe that your headset mic is where we're getting our audio. I think we're getting it from on board. Can you tap your headset mic? I'm sorry, Mike, you're fine.
I'm sorry.
I'm talking
excuse
to Rob.
Excuse me.
Mike, you have lovely audio. Yeah, we're not getting your audio from there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You're amazing.
I've heard those tapping noises before.
I
hear them in my sleep. Speaking of which, has anyone had any Google Plus dreams yet? I have to confess, I've been dreaming about Google Plus.
Jeff, that's kind of weird.
Welcome to my world.
That's not weird. I mean, you dream about what you're doing, right?
I've been spending a lot of time on Google Plus lately.
Clearly.
The gentleman on the far right seems to have a very high-definition webcam. Boy, oh boy. Looks special. Sorry?
Show it to you, except to, you know, you can't really show the webcam on the webcam. I wish I had a mirror. I did, but it's just a little, it's a Logitech Carl Zeiss 2 megapixel autofocus Tessar 2.0/3.7.
That Carl Zeiss does some nice work.
Yeah.
So, I'm very happy with it. I did deliberately buy a very good web camera because I knew I was going to do video recording. Because
you want to look pretty.
And I want to look pretty. So.
So how you doing, Mike?
Oh, fine. Enjoying July and August is when, like I say, the American friends come, and this year is exceptional. And it's great to be in America without having to go there.
For those who don't know, Mike produces RealEnglish.com, which is the EFL online world's one of their favorite video sites.
Well, thank you for the advice.
So,
a long time, yeah.
Being in America without being there, you kind of lost me.
Oh, it's just that all the old friends from college days are here, and it's like being back home.
And still being friends.
Which part?
My closest friends are those I went to college with in Pennsylvania.
Back in your hippie days.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you're not in the U.S. now. You must be somewhere
else. Yeah, I'm in France.
All right, okay. That would be
I've been living here for a long time.
John, how many people do we need to see of you?
Have you told
that's
yourself?
Interesting. He froze on one. Oh, interesting.
Did I duplicate my window accidentally? I was trying to take a snapshot of it, and I think I hit the wrong key.
Yeah, I see two of you on my screen. Oh, nope, you just disappeared.
Yeah, okay,
the non-live one. Hey, Jeff, my other question is, are you able to capture the chat in Google Plus as well as the chat in your other area?
Yes, not automatically, but if you just select all, copy, and paste somewhere, you can grab it before you exit the Hangout.
Wow.
Please capture it, because I lost mine when I did that.
You know, why don't I do that now, just in case?
Mike, say something else, because I'm trying to take your picture.
Sure. Oh. I don't know what to say.
You know, you can click on his picture, and it stays up.
Oh, right.
I can click on John's. Oh, I got your names here. Good. I can click on John.
Then you can unclick John, and then the person speaking's picture comes up first.
Oh, great. Very clever. I bet there are a lot of clever things to be discovered here. Like I say, it's my first attempt here. It's nice to meet Stephen and Rob and John. To be honest, your names are not familiar. I'm not as active as I should be in the social media world. But
well, then how'd you find us?
Oh, I've known Jeff for quite a while.
Oh, Jeff is the connector.
Yeah,
Bridger.
Absolutely.
Bridger. Oh, Bridger, sorry.
Thanks to World Bridges, EFL Bridges, I've been a guest twice, and I've really appreciated Jeff and the work he's been doing.
For sure.
And, you got me on a spot here. I don't know what
to say. How are you using mobile devices in your world?
Me? I kind of stopped being latest technology. When I sold my iPad Touch, it was the end of anything small and mobile for me. I'm just an old-fashioned web 1.0 internet guy, basically, who tries to use web 2.0 in little ways to keep my site up to date. I'm basically a video editor and an English language teacher. I mean, video maker and English language teacher.
And for your information, Stephen is a web 0.0, 1.0, 2.0, et cetera guy.
A legend.
Whose day job is just staying tuned to what's going on, and you just found an IRC logger. That's Stephen Down for you.
Okay.
We were talking about chat rooms. I'm so unhappy with my Java chat room, and Stephen added one to his little live interface, but it didn't have an automatic archiving function 5 minutes ago, but now it's going to. Is that correct, Stephen?
Sorry, so it didn't have a logger 5 minutes ago? Well,
you seem to have found an automatic logging function.
I found an automatic logging function. That doesn't mean I know how to use it yet or have installed.
But what do you have planned this afternoon?
Well, I'm still working on my grasshopper harvester because I'm going to be using it for that MOOC, and it's got to be done by the end of August, so I can't mess around too much. It's in addition to just harvesting posts, which it has been now, it's analyzing these posts, looking for media, looking for audio, which I'll toss onto the radio, of course, looking for videos, which I'll also toss onto the radio, etc., and then taking that and all the links and creating a giant global graph of all the interactions between whether it's harvesting and etc.
And Mike, I don't know if you realize this is an EduMOOC webcast. Do you know MOOCs?
Not really, no.
They're massive open online courses, basically people who say, okay, we're going to do a course and everyone in the world is invited and a couple thousand people sign up and a few hundred start out active and you wind up with a few guys in a hangout a couple weeks later. And Stephen was one of the first MOOCers, and he's got a huge MOOC coming up in a couple of months. And I'm wondering, Stephen, your latest thinking on...
I see that area here. Maybe I can get a URL for that.
Yeah, let's toss that in. But Stephen, I'm wondering, having seen EduMOOC, which maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to have kind of fizzled a bit, and all these new Google Plus things, what's your latest thinking on how to make change happen?
Yeah, if you're running a MOOC, do it sometime other than when Google Plus launches.
I don't know. I mean, that seems like a nice little synergy that could have helped the MOOC. I don't see that necessarily as a either or.
Yeah. They set up the MOOC, and I think they set it up with two major things. With, first of all, the online panel discussions, which were a really good idea. But my experience, anyways, has been they're really hard to find and to get to.
And participate in.
Well, I don't think you can participate in them. I have trouble just getting to them. I've yet to figure out how to participate in. So that's one thing, right? And then the other thing is that they have supporting this is the Moodle forums. And Moodle forums always die after a couple of weeks. Always. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. You have to log in, especially if you set up a new forum for each week. If you don't automatically subscribe, you don't see the new forum, so you don't know that there's a new conversation happening. People run out of things to say after they said, hi, I'm so-and-so from such-and-such. So, you know, you always have this huge, long thread. Why didn't oh, I see what's happening there. So, and we discovered this with the CCK MOOCs as well, that the forums die. And there's nothing in EduMOOC that I have found yet that duplicates the role of Grasshopper to aggregate what's happening in a various place.
What's your thumbnail sketch of what is Grasshopper?
Grasshopper is a very simple application that does some complicated things. Basically, it aggregates or brings together resources from various places across the web, merges them together, puts them into a database, and then helps me send out a daily newsletter summarizing all the different things that have happened all over the internet related to the course. And they don't have that. So there's, I was just looking today, I think it's your page, isn't it, Jeff? The
EduMOOC2011.blogspot?
Well, no, I'm not sure what the URL is, but it's the MOOCosphere.
Yeah, EduMOOCosphere, yeah.
Yeah, the EduMOOCosphere, which is really good. And there's all kinds of stuff happening all over the place. Although, you know, it's sort of like, you know, they start off together and then they sort of spread out and spread out and spread out. And there's nothing to bring them back together, so they spread out and then they dissipate and everything sort of tails off. But the whole idea of Grasshopper is to undissipate, to bring it.
So the change MOOC is going to happen. People are going to blog and they're going to tweet and they're going to Google Plus, and Grasshopper is going to aggregate all this and toss it out as a what?
Well, first of all, as a newsletter, email newsletter. You sign up for the email newsletter, you'll get a new email every day with the latest and greatest in the course. All the course in
the... Just the latest, or is it going to be filtered for the greatest?
Because
that's an issue too, is the filtering.
It won't be filtered much. The way I filter is I have too much stuff, I give it less space. So, like, for example, I aggregate the Twitter posts. Well, that's a lot of stuff, but I give each Twitter post like one or two lines in the newsletter. So I get a lot of stuff in a fairly short area. Same with blog posts, right? I've got a whole pile of blog posts or discussion posts or whatever. I'll just play the title with a link. But if I have fewer, I can give them a 1,000-word description. And it's totally based on quantity. I'm not sorting for the best. It's
Steven, interesting. Have you looked at crowdsourcing that? Do you have any voting systems or something like that?
No voting systems. I don't know if I want voting systems. I wouldn't prevent someone else from setting up a voting system. Right now, the main challenge is just bringing it together. But I won't lie. I mean, I've thought of these sorts of things in the past. It wouldn't be hard to add a voting system to Grasshopper because if you just put a simple link in the outgoing email newsletter, people click on the link and it records a vote for their identity against the resource that they're voting on. Maybe I'll do that. I don't know. It just hasn't been high on my list of priorities. Ranking things isn't high on my list of priorities generally, especially if you're not going to use the ranking to show some stuff and hide other stuff.
But, I mean, this plus one thing has utility. You know, if you've got all this content happening in a MOOC and the stuff that people find most interesting, they're plus one-ing, what are you going to – first of all, that's what I think. But what are you going to use for the main web interface for the course?
I don't know yet.
Really?
Well, Grasshopper, we might have.
But that's an email newsletter.
Well, but it's also a website. That's just it. Grasshopper, it produces the email newsletter, it produces a website, it produces the RSS feed, it produces the podcast. If I get it done right, it'll produce a course calendar. Because we've been scheduling all the events manually in the past and made mistakes with that in the last Connectivism course, Grasshopper has always had event items. We just haven't been using them. So it produces the course calendar. It produces the course bibliography.
Now, an example of this site would be downs.ca?
Yeah.
Okay. Are there other examples?
Downs.ca runs on Grasshopper. The Grasshopper link that you put in there, grsshopper.downs.ca, runs on Grasshopper. Connect.downs.ca is the last course. I forget what's on there now. I actually used that same site for two or three courses, but I really shouldn't.
Oh, we're boring Mike. Sorry, Mike.
Oh, yeah, this is Plank. Is on the Kinect site. So here's... That's Plank. And then, oh, yeah, cck11.mooc.ca.
How big was that? How many people were involved?
In cck11?
Yeah.
Just over 1,000. It was 1,023 or something like that.
And at that scale, did things get confusing or more focused?
Trying out Google.
Well, selectivist courses never get focused. I mean, if you've achieved focus in a connectivist course, you've probably done it wrong.
There isn't any kind of a snowballing effect that a topic becomes so hot everybody wants to be part of it?
No, it's more of a blizzard effect.
Okay.
and that's how it's designed, right? And everybody has their own different perspective. Even if there were one topic that everybody's on about, everybody would be on about it in a different way.
Okay.
And that's what we're trying to encourage. And that's how we approach the large-ish topic that defines the content of the course anyways, right? Everybody approaches it in their own way, from their own perspective, with their own tools, their own ideas, their own connections, their own contacts, and then they present that perspective. And that perspective is what goes into the mix, becomes part of the blizzard, and then becomes part of other people's perspectives.
Hey, Stephen, I'm curious with the MOOCs, what tool or what's caused people to stick around through the whole MOOC? Or have you figured that part out?
The newsletter. No question. Surveys. We've done more than one survey. By 2-to-1, 3-to-1, 5-to-1 margins, the tool that people find the most useful in the course is the daily newsletter. It just blows away everything else.
So it's a daily communication.
Now, I'm looking at the Plank MOOC, and the discussion in the wiki the discussion is Moodle, yes? Are you planning on using that again?
Yeah, in Plank, we had a Moodle set up, and that was 2010. In CCK11, we did not use a Moodle at all, and my estimation is that it was more successful without the Moodle.
What did you use for discussions?
People use their own blogs. Some people set up a Google what you mean in your groups area. What else did they do? There was a bunch of things that people did. But a lot of people use Twitter. Twitter was really big in CCK11.
And what's the plan for the live sessions?
We don't know yet. Illuminate doesn't like us anymore. It's just Blackboard bot.
Really? They've rejected you too?
Wow.
Yes, they rejected us. We are no longer welcome in Illuminate world.
How did they communicate that to you?
I don't know. They communicated it to George.
Oh.
We were running Illuminate on his site, and so I don't know exactly what they said, but George came back to me and said, Illuminate doesn't like us anymore. I've got a test installation, a big blue button on the go right now. It's not up and running yet, but I hope to have it up and running by the time the course starts. So that's one thing we might explore. If that doesn't work, I don't know what I'll use. We'll find something.
Can always hang out.
Can always hang out. The hangouts are okay. I have noticed that people during the course, also for the first time with CCK11, I used Ed Radio. Actually, I used DS106 Radio until I ran into scheduling problems, and then I used Ed Radio. And that always did have a pretty good following during the course. People really liked that because it's pretty low tech, and even better, it's low bandwidth. So, you know, it's only coming in at 64K per second, you know, which is almost like old telephone grade modem. It's just a little bit more than that. You might remember the 14.4 and then the 6, and I forget what the next one up from that was, but it's that realm of bandwidth. 28.8. 64, wasn't it?
64K, yeah.
Yeah. So if you're using a, you know, dial up now, you're probably using a 64K modem, and that's the bandwidth that Ed Radio goes out on. So people with these dial up connections can listen to Ed Radio, and my best information is that it works just fine. They can't do things like Illuminate, so you know, that doesn't replace the conferencing system, but it allows us to extend the reach of the conferencing system.
Steven, in the other MOOCs, were you able to pull out any demographics? Like, did you see if there were more males that were involved than females or anything like that?
There was a research group attached to the CCK MOOC. They published a bunch of papers, demographics. The main thing, the main point of interest about the demographics was it was an older crowd.
Huh.
So, I don't recall anything as far as male-female ratio goes being significant. It was pretty worldwide. I really liked, although, you know, with an emphasis on the English-speaking countries, which is not surprising because it was in English. My own recollection in the first MOOC, AO8, we had a very strong Spanish language component. They ended up building 3 separate Spanish-speaking areas in Second Life, for example, which was kind of interesting. In CCK11, the biggest subgroup that I noticed, and this is just me noticing, this is not me taking, you know, taking down numbers, was the German-speaking group, which I found kind of interesting. I don't know how that happened, but it did.
This change MOOC is probably going to be the longest MOOC in history. What was the thinking behind making it so... How long is it?
Well, it's... I don't know.
83 weeks or something?
It's long. The thinking were two things. Part of it was... This change MOOC is the least like a course we've ever done. And each week is almost self-contained. And we really want to push it that way. Because each week we're featuring a different person from the world of educational technology. And what we're asking them to do is bring your best work to the table. Bring your main contribution to the field to the table. Present that, and we'll talk about that. And the purpose of this change MOOC is to create a publication, a publication of record with all of these contributions, with contributions from the MOOC people as well, adding to that, and then distribute that. It'll be, you know, if you want to know what the state of educational technology is in 2012, you will need this book. So, you know, you can't just pick 10 or 15 people to do this. I mean, there's a lot of people. We could have done twice the number of people, and I'm still pushing for a second segment to change .ca. to actually include wrestling. We're still weak internationally. We're still weak on K-12. We're a little bit weak in corporate learning. So there's a lot more we can bring to the table and add a second volume to this state-of-the-art book on ed tech. So that was the thinking. And I think it's good thinking. And I think because it's new every week that we'll be able to maintain the interest. It won't be the whole, we all get together and introduce ourselves in week one and then go away. There'll be sort of a steady, a steady refreshing of interest. That's the whole. And I think, we get that spike. You almost get that spike, and then we'll tail off, and it'll level out, and it'll level out probably, I don't know, in 100. Who knows?
I'm sorry, Steve. I just wanted to acknowledge Nelly and say hello. And yes, this is live. We are actually here.
Hi, Jeff. That's not what I meant. I know you're alive. I mean, you're live. But no, I was. I'm really annoyed. I get this message from someone, I don't know where. I'm at a conference, so I'm in the middle of something anyway. So I go into my computer and I get this message. Are you coming to the live session? So I thought there was a live session for the EduMOOC.
Oh, yeah, it was me on Facebook.
Oh, it was you, right, exactly. Yeah. So I ran over there. I didn't know when you posted your message. So I ran over there and I'm listening to this. Turns out that it's a recording. It's not even live. I mean, what's the point of having a live session if you don't see anyone? You don't have, chat box. It's like, what is that? They could have created that last year, right? Recorded last year. So what are we doing here? So I know this is live, and I really appreciate that. I can touch you guys, right? You're alive.
Thing going on right now. Is that it?
Steven, you're coming in kind of low again.
I'm
Nelly,
sorry.
Nelly, you ought to write that up as a blog post or something. That's a great story.
I wrote about blogs, too. I think they're kind of, young people don't write blogs as much as, we do for some reason. I wonder why.
Too much work.
They're on Facebook. What do you mean? Why make a blog when you can just do a status update on your Facebook page? 7 hours a day are the latest statistics.
Yeah, well, so how many of you are writing blogs?
I do.
Occasionally.
I'm supposed to be.
I publish audio and video. Text isn't my thing.
Hey, it's a multimedia world. But I like text. I've always liked text. I'll probably keep typing text until I can't.
So how do you produce the oil daily? Like, do you just, when you come across something in the middle of the day, you write up your paragraph about it, it gets posted, and then however many of those things you've posted get sent out as the oil daily?
That's it exactly. I do have a system now. I put it in last year because I was like tapping for a month, where I can schedule posts for dates in the future. But I don't use it that often. I only use it when I know I'm not going to be around. But generally, I have my RSS feed and my email and now my Google Plus and whatever else where I scan. I'm always scanning.
So did you just say you're able to predict the future?
Well, like, for example, in August I'll be camping. I'm predicting the future there.
Uh-huh. Is the oil daily part of your day job? I mean, is that what Canada's paying you to do, or that's just something you do as part of how you spend your day?
Canada's paying for part of it, and we need to be clear about that. I was doing oil daily before I started with this job. And when I came on to this job, one of the conditions was I get doing the web stuff that I have been doing. And over the years, they've tried different conditions. When I originally came on, they said, oh, yeah, we love this. We want you to do this. We'll host it on our servers. It'll be even better. so Hello Daily actually did go on NRC servers, and that lasted until about 2005, 2006. And, of course, you know, when you work in government, if anyone disagrees with anything you do anywhere, they call your supervisor and complain. So I got a few calls from supervisor that were complaints and really stupid things. Like, incredibly stupid. No. You'd think with all the political stuff that I do, it'd be like, you know, I said the wrong thing. The thing that the last straw was a complaint came in. There was this woman who had this ed tech company out of Vancouver, and my site showed up higher on Google than her site did when somebody did a search for her site name. I forget what it was, Wingnut or whatever, right? So if you search Wingnut, you'd get my site and then wingnut.org. So she complained and asked my managers to have me lower my search engine ranking.
Wow. Lower your search engine ranking. Wow.
Bad part was I was given a directive from my director, director general, to lower my search engine ranking because I was taking this person's place in the search, and illicitly taking this person's place. So I sent back an email explaining how Google was a site separate from me, that I didn't have any control of the rankings. But that was the last straw, and there had been a few complaints of that ilk. I mean, they were all like that ridiculous.
I have a question for you, Stephen, but I want to quickly address a couple tech things. Nelly, we discussed Stephen's camera earlier, and I will toss the specifications in the show notes for this. And I knew that dog noise was coming from Mike, because if you mouse over someone in a Google Hangout, you can see the volume meter movement in their little green icon mic. And to anyone I have muted because of whatever reasons, basically I'm an audio nag, please feel free to unmute yourself at any time to chime in. So Stephen, how are you getting along with Canada these days? Like, do they ever say, you know, we want you to go more in this direction, or do they just kind of leave you alone and you sign on year by year?
Canada these days would like to exert very firm directions on exactly what I do, who I work with, and what I research, but they don't know what those directions are. I'm serious. So over the summer, I've sort of had this period. I spent the last couple of years working on a project, and at the end of the project, they said, we want the website taken down, and you're not allowed to communicate the results of this project to anyone. So there is a project that I've been working on for the last 2 years, which actually has some results, and I can't talk about it. Although if anybody looks at, you know, websites that I may have put up and they're no longer available, you could probably figure what the project E was.
Okay.
So there's that, but over the summer I sort of have this space where they're trying to exert this complete control, but they seriously haven't decided what they want to do. And they haven't included me, that they know they want to do a big e-learning project, and they haven't included me in the planning of it. So
who is they?
My managers.
Which part of the Canadian government is that?
National Research Council.
Okay.
So I don't know what will happen in the fall. So over the summer, I've just been messing around with Grasshopper, which I actually did get them to allow me to distribute as open source. Yay. So I have something I can work on, something that's approved, something that will have impact. And I was sort of tricked into asking for permission to do the MOOC course this fall. I didn't ask for permission, but I was asked to write an email describing it, so I did, and it was submitted as a request on my behalf. So I have permission to do that, so that's good.
But it doesn't sound like Canada's being real progressive about embracing open content and the like.
No. there is, well, NRSC has an initiative called NPARC, which is open access to all the research publications. Let me see if I can't find the URL for that. Yeah, there it is. First on the Google list. How about that? So I'll just toss it in here. And so that's all the publications for all the NRC researchers open access. Now, all rights are reserved, right? So there's no Creative Commons in our government, or no anything like Creative Commons. But at least you can access the stuff. And it's kind of a partial record in here of my own publications. It's not the full list. You know, we don't have the most efficient process of getting them up. But the project at least exists. So, and, you know, I think there's a recognition that there does need to be more openness and does need to more disclosure. You look at the government websites, they all have this thing called proactive disclosure. And, well, except I'm looking at the NRC site and I don't see it. But maybe on the homepage it will be there. Yeah, there is. They have proactive disclosure. And so they do things like they disclose contracts, they disclose travel and hospitality expenses, they disclose grants and contributions. Every department has one of these in the federal government. And that came in just recently, like last few years. It's a good thing. So it's slow, but it's
kind of... So if we publish this video, you're not going to get in any trouble, are you?
No.
Or any more trouble than you're already in?
No. It's one of these things. People think the news media is much more influential than it is, right? They would actually have to be watching this video, or somebody would have to be watching this video who would have some reason to complain that I said something, and then would need to figure out what it was that I said. That is, the odds of it are just forget it. There's not going to be any trouble. They have not, and they cannot clamp down on freedom of speech, right? So, and the only time there's two ways I can get into trouble. One way to get into trouble is to talk specifically about the position, the work that we're doing, etc., in derogatory ways or in ways that disclose IP. Right, that would get me into trouble. That would very slowly get me into trouble. That would get me into trouble if it came up in a court case down the line somewhere. The other way I can get into trouble, and this would happen really quickly, would be if I became overtly political, said how much I love or hate some political party, while using NRC facilities. Nope, the distinction. On my half an hour blog, which I work on at home on equipment that's completely owned by me, and I've been very careful to make sure I have my own computer, I pay for my own internet access, etc. So there's no government support for this. On that, I can say what party I support, etc., and I can make political statements. But I can't use any government equipment or time or services to indicate support for a political party.
Does that apply to hockey as well?
No. Go Senators, go. Hockey's fine. And that makes sense, right? You don't want your civil servants using their office to campaign for a political party. They can campaign all they want, but they got to do it on their own time with their own money. Of course. Totally makes sense. So when I'm at home using my own equipment, I'll be a lot more overtly political. OL Daily, you'll notice, doesn't campaign overtly politically, but half an hour sometimes does. And therein lies the difference, because I'm allowed to declare some of the time I work on OL Daily on NRC. All the expenses for OL Daily I pay for myself. I pay for the server myself, for example. I'll use, if I'm in the office, I'll use government equipment to make an OL Daily post. But the bulk of the cost of producing Olo Daily is mine. But NRC does support it to some degree. So in OL Daily, I will not make statements that support one political party or another. Still, as you know, a huge range for opinion. So it's pretty free.
All right, well, I am going to need to wrap this up in a bit. Any thoughts before we click the exit button?
Just nice to meet everybody. Despite all the interruptions I've had, I'm glad to hang out, and I'll surely be hanging out in the future, especially come September when I'm a lot more free. Hope to see you again.
Great to see you again, Mike. EFL Bridges is coming to life again, and enjoy your face-to-face hanging out.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Guys. Thanks a lot. I hope I didn't monopolize things. It wasn't my intent. I actually intended to come in and listen to your audio on my radio station.
Please do give Wiki the Speech a try. I'll update it with all of the other additions from... I didn't capture everything, obviously, but it'll be a quick summary. And
I will shoot you, John, the entire chat log.
Oh, you want to send that to me?
Sure. You can do whatever you want with it, but you said you had lost part of the chat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe just post it somewhere. That would be good.
Can you post it in Google Plus, I wonder?
Yeah, post, take it. Actually, hang on. Oh, no, I can't. Well, yeah, I can do this. Hang on. Oh, but I only have the chat log from when I started, so you'll have to do this. But take the chat log and post it as a comment underneath the Google Plus page for this particular
hangout, huh?
Okay, I'm Skyping it to myself now. Which I have to say, Skype is the biggest loser in this whole thing, because I've already cut my Skype. You know, I used to pay Skype $30 a month for various services, and with Hangout, I'm down to $10 a month and may go lower.
Oh, John, maybe you know the answer to this question. So is there a free international texting app that I can use? My daughter's going to be going to Italy and study there. We want a free app that will go between our phones.
There's one out of Korea that may work.
Korea, of course. KakaoTalk?
Kakao. I'll put this in the
chat. Okay, thanks. Sorry.
This is one of the most valuable things I'm getting out of this whole EduMOOC thing is new tools. Poplet was entirely new to me, and you know, here I've built stuff with it. You get these tools and you pick them up so fast, and you know, you can really be productive.
Yeah, and then it got broken because of you.
Yes.
I mean, this morning the Twitter.
Jeff says we got to keep trying until we. Yeah.
If you're not breaking something, you're not trying hard enough.
That's right, because there I noticed on my Twitter feed this morning the Poplet says we're back up. It's at 400% now, and I thought of you, John.
Well, thanks very much,
anyway,
all. This has been
everybody.
A great MOOCcast. Enjoy
never
your week, and I'll be here next week hanging out.
Right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.